17-1257, In re Janssen Biotech. Sure, already. Okay, some of this is going to sound familiar, I guess, but why don't you proceed?
May it please the court. The board's denial of safe harbor protection should be reversed because it is premised on two fundamental errors that drastically shrink eligibility for the safe harbor and distort this court's constant test. First, the board erred in creating its divisional as filed test, even though that requirement...
At what precise point in time do you assert that the 471 patent transformed from being CIP application of 413 and 406 applications to instead a divisional in substance application? Okay. What specific time?
There were two specific actions during the prosecution where Janssen...
Yeah, is it May or December? I mean, I guess one.
Well, in the preliminary...
Or something else.
In the preliminary amendment, they certainly signaled that because they told the examiner that they were proceeding out of deference to the restriction requirement in the 413 parent. They were deleting the claims that were directed to the methods of treatment. The methods of treatment, of course, were the group 4 claims that were elected in the parent and in the reference patents. So in the preliminary amendment, they took out those claims. And then in the election of species requirement, of course, they took out the claims that were solely supported by the 406 patent. But then, most critically, in the amendment, Section 129 amendment, they came back and they explained that they were entitled to Section 121 safe harbor protection because they had canceled the relevant claims in the 093 application, and they had canceled in the other application.
So is it December 95 then?
Well, it's a combination of those, Your Honor.
There has to be a date.
Well, certainly by December 95 they had done that. By December 1994, the preliminary amendment signaled that, and then in May 8, 1997, that amendment signaled it again. And at that point, there was no question that they were entitled to that safe harbor amendment, or safe harbor protection, because the examiner granted them that protection consistent with the practice at the time. Remember, we showed that evidence that there were many patents where the patent office had treated applications as both CIPs and divisionals. We showed 34 examples of that. And we showed the Martech reexamination where the patent office had treated an application as a CIP application as a divisional. In fact, in reexamination, had redesignated it as a divisional and granted safe harbor protection. That was the practice at the time. But what the argument has been is that, no, that was not the practice at the time. And my colleague has cited an official Gazette notice that said one shouldn't treat a CIP as a divisional. But that was years after, or 18 months after at least, in that case, the grant of the 471 patent, where both Janssen and the examiner, consistent with the practice at the time, had treated that application as both a continuation in part and a divisional. And it was key that Janssen respected that divisional treatment by not claiming the added subject matter that was in there that made it a CIP. And so
was that undertaken solely for procedural purposes?
No, it was they were giving that added disclosure to the public without claiming it. Now, when on the day that patent application was filed, there were claims to that additional subject matter. But Janssen deleted those claims during prosecution before it requested the safe harbor protection. So throughout the prosecution, Janssen and the examiner both treated this effectively as
a let's go back a little bit. You say throughout the prosecution. But I don't think there's any dispute that the 471 patent was filed as a continuation in part, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And there's no dispute either that the 471 patent contained new disclosures and new matter that was not found in the 413 patent.
That's correct.
So, form and substance, you're looking at a division.
In substance, we're looking at both because it was originally truly in substance a continuation in part. But then Janssen came in those two events. First, in December 1994, in the preliminary amendment, they cut out all of the claims that were not consonant, all the method of treatment claims. And then, in the May 8, 1997 amendment, when previously all of the claims that were not supported by the 413 parent had been removed, they came in and said, we are entitled to the safe harbor protection. At that point, it was effectively a divisional. The examiner recognized that by granting the safe harbor protection. The examiner cited the fact that the claims were now distinct between the 093 application and the 799 application that issued as the 195. So truly, throughout the prosecution, Janssen was making it clear both to the examiner and to the public that this was a divisional. So in reexamination, when they changed the designation from CIP to divisional, they were changing the fundamental nature of the application. They were simply correcting the designation.
In the red brief, the USPTO at 34 and 35 says that you mischaracterized the PTAB's 2013 re-exam decision when you stated the examiner authorized Janssen's amendment, authorized in quotes, and thus, quote, the amendments have effectively designated the 093 application a divisional of the parent application, close quote. Was this a misrepresentation?
No, it wasn't. Janssen petitioned to have...
We're in the JA. Can you show us the PTO expressly referring to 093 or 471 as divisional?
Well, when the office directed the entry of these amendments, I mean, there is no question that Janssen petitioned for the entry of the amendments, and the office granted those amendments. What the examiner is doing is raising a red herring. What they're saying is there's no dispute about that the office granted the petition. The dispute is about what the effect is of that. Their argument is really that the order granting the petition did not resolve the substantive issue of whether such amendment would be effective to alter the nature of the patent under reexamination. So in other words, what the examiners are saying is the director granted the petition, but that doesn't resolve the issue. It doesn't resolve the issue of whether your amendment to designate this officially a divisional answers the question. And really what they're looking at there is not compliance with the statute, because we convinced the director that we were complying with the statute. Their argument there was that this court's cases like Searle prevented that from being effective, when that's just simply not the case. And, Your Honor, you asked for a specific JA site, mm-hmm. And that site would be really the order granting the petition. And find that for you.
You don't have to.
Okay. Appendix 1117 through 1134. So what the argument there, and we believe it's a red
is 413 the parent application?
Yes.
What about 406?
The 406 was a parent application, and it was the parent application with respect to the added matter, or what Judge Rayner referred to as the new matter. So it was the 406 was a parent application for the added matter. That added matter was never claimed in the 417 patent, and the added matter was removed, and the priority claim was removed in the reexamination to the 406 patent. So the assertion by the examiners is really kind of nitpicking there. What they're saying is, despite the entry of that amendment, that it doesn't take effect until the certificate issues, and we heard that from our colleague in the previous argument. But it's very clear in the statute that the office is to treat that, or excuse me, it's clear in the regulation that the office is to treat that as if it had been entered. And so in this appeal, we are proceeding as if that amendment had been entered. And this, in fact, has been redesignated as a divisional. But returning to your original question, Judge Wallach, Janssen's belief is it signaled to the examiner, to the public, early and throughout the original examination that this was being treated as a divisional, entitled to the safe harbor, and that simply in reexamination, Janssen simply redesignated that to formally designate that as a divisional. But what I was pointing out originally is that there are two fundamental errors that the board made, and the first was in this divisional as filed requirement. There is no basis for that requirement in Section 121, and that requirement flatly conflicts with the PTO's practice under Section 120, allowing an applicant to file a continuation and then come in and amend that to divisional status. We have never heard from the board or from the PTO how they could be making this divisional as filed argument, which is a completely new rule, not supported by the statute or this court's case law, when it flies in the face of that practice. For decades, patentees have been filing applications as continuations and later coming in and redesignating those as divisionals. And there's no...
When you say continuation, you mean continuations in part or continuations?
Or continuations in part. And coming in... And
so for your statement is for years they've designated them as continuations in part and then changed them to divisionals and this... office has accepted that?
I'm saying two things. That one, for years they filed them as continuations and later changed them as divisionals. And then for years they filed them as continuations and designated them as continuations in part and divisionals. In other words, there are both, but the practice that's very common is filing continuations and later coming in.
Okay, well, my question, I was still a little confused.
Okay.
My question is there a practice of filing them as continuations in part and then allowing people to come in and recast them as divisionals?
Yes, the 34 patents that we have shown have been designated as both continuations in part and divisionals. But the practice that I was referring to is the one that's very common of simply filing continuations with the same disclosure and later complying with the requirement that they be called divisionals. And so what that shows is that the divisional as filed requirement isn't something that's consistent with PTO practice. And so it goes back to Judge Reyna's policy argument from the last case, where He was asking about, you know, what is the policy here? Is the policy unjustified extension? No, that Congress trumped that policy with Section 121 when it looked at fairness to the patentee that had been forced to prosecute applications on different inventions in separate applications. And that's what happened here. There's no question there was a restriction requirement in the parent. And Congress said, in that case, we have Section 121. And this was an instance that implicates another policy that we pointed out.
Let's go back to the question I asked you about whether the amendment that you rely on, if that was procedural in form, because it seems to me that it is. And if it is, then I think that you lose. I don't see that the PTO took the action that you say that it did, that it granted the motion to amend for purposes of what ultimately resulted to be a divisional patent. They granted the motion for a direct entry of amendments, and they did it for reexamination purposes only, so that they could send the patent back or the re-exam back to the office for final action, correct?
Correct.
So I don't see this character changing event that took place with respect to the amendment. Can you just briefly focus on that?
Sure. We're not saying that petition resolved, that the grant of that petition resolved all the issues. What we're saying is the director, in granting that petition, recognized that Janssen had complied with the statutes and regulations that allowed it to, in this reexamination, formally designate as a divisional an application that both Janssen and the examiner throughout the original prosecution had treated as a divisional, and that was consistent with the practice of the time, and as a result, Janssen had an expectation that of the kind that the Supreme Court in Festo said, this court should not be creating bright line rules that destroy the expectations of patentees.
But you were not granted a motion to amend to redesignate the patent.
We were granted a petition to enter amendments, one of many amendments.
But you were not granted a motion to redesignate the patent.
It wasn't a motion, it was a petition.
Or a petition.
And the petition was to amend the application.
Okay, I get that. But again, you were not granted a petition to redesignate the patent.
I'm missing the point of that.
I recognize the point that this amendment process took place. I just don't see the basis for it that you're arguing. I see that what happened was purely procedural in form and did not have the effect of redesignating the patent.
Well, it has had the effect of amending the patent, so it is the patent application, so it is now a divisional, and the question is, what is the effect of that? And the question is that effective in this case to allow application of the safe harbor protection? So I think we might be missing each other on terminology, and I think the answer is that the grant, the entry of the amendments, the grant of the petition was a recognition that Janssen complies with the statute of
conscience.
I see my time is up.
Well, why don't you stay here, because Judge Reyna had a question, and perhaps even
can you address briefly the issue of consonants?
Yes, consonants, certainly. The board erred in holding that the 471 and one of the reference patents violated consonants. The PTO is arguing here now that all three of the patents violated consonants because the claims were not limited to TNF-alpha. That's not clear that was the board decision. But let's talk about what the simple facts are. There is no dispute that this court's confidence test is whether the issued claims of these three patents crossed the line of demarcation that was set out in the parent application's restriction requirement. That line of demarcation was between the group four claims that the parent and the reference patents prosecuted. That's the method of treatment claims. And here we have the antibody and assay claims, what have been referred to as the antibody claims of group one. It's very clear that all of the claims of the 471 are group one claims. There's no treatment method claims. Those were canceled in the preliminary amendment. And it's likewise very clear that all of the claims of the reference patents are method of treatment claims. Under this court's test, that is the end of the analysis of consonance. We don't look for consonance at claims that may have been during the prosecution, and we don't look at the claims that were pending in the parent at the time that may have referred to TNF-alpha. And that's the argument that we're seeing here, is that they're not consonant because they don't specifically require TNF-alpha, and that's wrong on two reasons.
So the consonance ground, that was an alternative ground by the board, right? So if we affirmed on the safe harbor issue, we don't have to reach this particular issue.
You do not have to reach consonance because the board relied on its divisional as filed requirement to say on the date of filing, the description has to be divisional, the claims have to be consonant, and the written description has to be based solely on that of the parent. And that is a requirement that finds no basis in the statute and flat out conflicts with the Patent Office's policy under Section 120.
Okay, thank you. We'll restore 2 minutes of rebuttal, and let's hear from the government.
May it please the Court. In 1994, Janssen...
Can you try to speak into the microphone? I'm sorry.
In 1994, Janssen made an unequivocal choice to file the 093 application as a CIP application. It told the USPTO in three separate papers that it was filing it as a CIP application. By choosing to do so, Janssen chose to forego falling under the safe harbor. And nothing that the examiner or Janssen did during the prosecution...
Okay, counsel, is this really a bright-line test that we should adopt, that if you file your application and it's designated as such as a CIP, that nothing can ever happen in the course of the proceedings to change it into divisional?
I think it is a bright-line rule, Your Honor, and if you look at your case law, it's based on statutory construction that it has to be a divisional as filed. And Janssen here tries to make equity arguments and tries to talk about...
But don't they also, and maybe you can clarify for me because I wasn't really understanding it thoroughly, the representation was made that it's the office's practice to allow one to change from continuations to divisional, and some suggestion that includes CIPs under certain circumstances. Can you explain if that is their policy?
And while you're batting cleanup, I was going to ask your opposing counsel about Amgen and Searle and why it didn't just blow them out, but you can...
Okay.
Deal with that.
You've got three people to respond to here.
So let me take first, the office policy. They haven't pointed to any situation where we took a CIP and turned it into a divisional, because those things are completely different, right? And when you file a CIP...
So you're saying to Judge Reyna, there is a bright line.
Yes, for CIP, definitely. And, there are practices where you can amend and change your benefit claim. But I am not aware of the office ever allowing anyone to change a CIP into a division.
Yeah, I know the office hasn't allowed it. The question is whether we should allow it and whether we should actually adopt a bright-line test. We're kind of leery by now of bright-line tests. You may have heard. But... they serve their purpose, and this may be one of them. And so that's why I asked you for your argument on that.
Right, and so as this court held, it was a statutory construction of 121 that it meant division on its file. And you said it in three different cases. You said it in Pfizer, you said it in Amgen, and you said it in Searle, saying you can't go back and retroactively change it as file. You know, there are certain things in prosecution you can fix. There are other things in prosecution you can't fix. And if you make a choice, and there's no suggestion that this was a mistake, they unequivocally made the choice to file the CIP. And according to your case law, that's the end of the story.
And what's the policy behind that? Why? Well, why shouldn't they be able to, at some point, change course?
Well, first of all, when you file an application, you're putting the public on notice of what that type of application is, so there's a notice function. You're also telling the office something. If you file a CIP, you're informing the office that there's additional matter, that your claims may go to that additional matter, that all of those claims might not have support in the priority application. So there's a lot of notice function to both the public and to the office in order to make the office's job more efficient.
But if they amend it, then there's notice given by the amendment.
There's notice given by the amendment, but according to 121, it has to be a divisional as filed. It's very clear that, changing it after the case doesn't really, there's no reason to allow someone to do that. If Janssen had wanted to file a divisional, they could have filed a divisional as a separate application. They could have done that before those other reference patents had issued, and they chose not to do so. Instead, they prosecuted this as a CIP, alter prosecution.
So if they have an easy way out, there is a way of doing it outside by initiating the application, then why go through all that trouble? Why not recognize that there may be a point in time in the application process that a continuation in part can turn divisional?
I'm sorry, I don't think I understood that question.
Can you repeat it? Okay. You may not have heard. It seems to me that you're saying that they could have taken action at a later time by filing as a divisional.
Filing a separate application.
A separate application.
That's a divisional.
So if there's a way out, and that's a way out,
right,
to do this, then why have a bright line test? Why not create or recognize that there's a point in the proceeding in the application process that a CIP can turn divisional?
Because a CIP is filed as a CIP and has all this extra subject matter in it. Like I'm saying, if they wanted a divisional application, that's a separate application that they could have filed. But the office, as far as I'm aware, they haven't pointed to any instances. We do not change CIPs during prosecution into divisionals as a matter of...
What about your opponent's argument that you didn't cause a change to happen when you granted their petition for amendment?
It was a petition, and so the office entered the petition, granted the petition for formal reasons to allow the issue to come to the board. And what the examiner did in the advisory action, which is at 862 to 863, is he says, even in light of them, this petition being granted, I am still maintaining my obviousness type double patent rejection. So we could go to the board and all sort of merits.
The examiner said that, and the board affirmed that.
So then it went to the board, and then the board was able to address the merits of the issue. So, but the amendments aren't final until a re-exam certificate.
So your view seems to be consistent with mine that that petition process, that moment that we're talking about, that was for procedural purposes only.
Correct. It was to allow the issue to be raised on the merits to the board.
Okay.
And what about Judge Rayner raised the issue of consonance?
So,
is that in fact an alternative ground? So if we were hypothetically to agree with what you've said thus far about the CIPs and divisionals, do we reach the issue of consonance?
You do not have to reach the issue of consonance. In order for Janssen to get under the safe harbor, they would have to show both that the application they filed was a divisional and the divisional CIP argument works in their favor, and that there was consonance. So if you find with the office on the divisional, you do not have to reach.
But there's an argument that an application changes from a CIP to a divisional. That argument, doesn't that fly in the face of an argument of that consonance is maintained?
So I guess what they're saying is because they got rid of all their additional subject matter, that they were able to still show consonance with the original application where the restriction requirement was made. And what the office said, and the board does say this at page 25, I think. So if you look at the 195 application, those claims aren't limited to TNF-alpha. And because the restriction requirement was made in the application that was limited to TNF-alpha, it's not consonance with the application where the restriction was made. There's no further questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, and let me just say, you know, because I've been saying that, you know, the office had no practice about the CIP or divisional. There was one instance where they, now that I think of it, did a re-exam, the MARTEC re-exam, and that was before the CERT report, and it's cited in their brief and our brief, where during re-examination, the office did allow an application to change from a CIP to a divisional, and that is the one instance that I'm aware of, and it was in the re-exam context, and it was before this, so things came out. It didn't go to the board, it was just an examiner and re-exam and made that decision.
Thank you.
Counsel, before you sit down, thank you for pointing that out. I mean, I was aware of that case, and that's an example of a citation that may not go in your favor. I mean, it doesn't matter in this instance, but thank you for bringing out that type of citation.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but I was thinking that was just a prosecution.
That's the level I expect from the United States, and I'm always glad to see it.
Thank you.
A lot of questions that were raised, and I'll try and address all of them as efficiently as I can. What we heard was that by filing a CIP, Janssen chose to forego the safe harbor protection, but I also heard a concession that applicants are allowed to change applications, both their designation from a CIP or a continuation to a divisional during the original examination. Applicants are allowed to amend a specification by deleting added subject matter. Applicants are allowed to amend claims. Applicants are allowed to do all these things, and there is no statute or regulation that says that they cannot. So the basis for this assertion that by filing a CIP, Janssen forever gave up the chance to turn that into a divisional is based solely on their reading of this court's case law. And perhaps we ought
to... And the statute.
Well, there is nothing in Section 121 that requires that to be a divisional on the day it is filed. In fact, Section 121 incorporates Section 120. And Section 120...
Doesn't 121 require that for the safe harbor to apply that it must be filed as a divisional?
Absolutely not. What it calls it the divisional application in distinction to the preceding application. It doesn't say this has to be a divisional on the day of filing. But what it does is it incorporates or refers back to the requirements of Section 120. And Section 120 clearly says that an application can be designated with a priority claim or amended to have a priority claim.
On its face, 121 only applies to divisional.
I'm sorry?
On its face, Section 121 only applies to divisional.
That's correct. And it's talking about divisional patents or what are protected there. And so what it's doing is it's incorporating that Section 120 standard, and the Patent Office's practice under Section 120 has been to allow applicants to change the designation, the claims, and the written description so that by the time the patent issues, it is a divisional, it's based on a divisional application, and it's called a divisional patent. The court, I see my time is up.
You can make one more point.
Make one more point.
Yes.
What's that?
Okay. The petition to grant the order granting the petition to enter the amendment shows that the 471 patent claims were supported by the 413 parent alone at that time, and the issue claims of that patent were supported by the parent alone. That is the hallmark of a divisional as opposed to a CIP. And that's what it was during prosecution, and that's what it became. So in conclusion then, we would ask, because there is no divisional as filed requirement, because Janssen complied with the statutes and the regulations, and the claims are consonant, those claims should be entitled to the safe harbor protection, and the board's decision should be reversed.
Thank you. We thank both sides, and the case is submitted.